ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 22nd chapter, verses 21 to 39. Sri Maitreya said, translation by Srila Prabhupada, O great warrior Vidura, the sage Kardama said this much only, and then became silent, thinking of his worshipable Lord Vishnu, who has a lotus on his navel. As he silently smiled, his face captured the mind of Devahuti, who began to meditate upon the great sage. So in the previous chapter, Kardama praised Manu, comparing him to the demigods, the sun god, the moon god, Indra, Dharma, accepting him as the true representative of the Lord, who upholds religious principles. Now in this chapter, Manu is glorifying Kardama, saying that the Brahmins are the heart of the social body, whereas the Kshatriyas are the arms meant for protection of the Brahmins. But actually, the Brahmins protect the Kshatriyas and the Kshatriyas protect the Brahmins for the benefit of the whole human society. So when there's mutual respect, cooperation between all the sections of society, then the whole society flourishes and there's peace and prosperity. So we heard yesterday how Manu offered his daughter to Kardama, and Kardama has accepted Devahuti, and he's told, on the condition that after I give you children, then I'll take sannyas. And also, another thing he said was, I have one priority. And what's that priority of Kardama Muni? Yes. Yes, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see here in this verse also, as soon as he stops talking, then he starts thinking of Krishna, because that's what's on his mind, actually. So this is, we're going to find here what's on the mind of Kardama and what's on the mind of Swayambhuva Manu is very similar. So here in purport, Srila Prabhupada says, it appears that Kardama Muni was fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, because as soon as he became silent, he at once began to think of Lord Vishnu. That is the way of Krishna consciousness. Pure devotees are so absorbed in thought of Krishna, they have no other engagement. Although they may seem to think or act otherwise, they are always thinking of Krishna. The smile of such a Krishna conscious person is so attractive that simply by smiling, he wins so many admirers, disciples, and followers. That was true, Srila Prabhupada, that just by his smiling, we were attracted to him, and we were competing how to make him smile all the time. And there's also another devotee I know who's always smiling. His name is Sachinandan Swami. Very attractive smile he has also. And there was one story about him that one temple president in India, he invited Sachinandan Swami to come for a procession. They're having a procession in their city. And Maharaj said, well, you know, but my voice is gone. I can't speak. I can't lead kirtan. And the TP, he said, doesn't matter. All you have to do is sit there and smile, and everyone will be attracted. So this is the attraction of the smile of a person who is actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness. They attract people simply by smiling. So Prabhupada, he lectured on this verse again in Tehran, in 1976, on the point of absorption in Krishna. And he quoted the verse of Aymana Krishna, Pararavindayo. This Maharaj Ambarish was always thinking of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, we also have to think in the same way. Also in Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, it's all about thinking about Krishna. But Prabhupada gives us the way, the method of always thinking of Krishna. It's a very simple method. What is that method? Chant Hare Krishna. Yes. So in this lecture also, he says, Kirtaniya Sadahari. This is the way you can always think of Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna. Because in this age, our minds are completely useless, finished. In fact, in previous ages, if you just thought of something bad, you would get the reaction. But we learned last year in the first canto, in this age, if you just think of something good, you get the reaction. If you think of something bad, you don't get the reaction. Whereas in previous ages, it was the opposite. So therefore, thinking means chanting the holy name of Krishna. So Maharaj Ambarish is the example. He had so many responsibilities. He was emperor of the world, but he was always thinking. Or not emperor of the world, but he was emperor of something or other. And he was always thinking. He may have been emperor of the world, for all I know. But anyway, he was always thinking of Krishna. Prabhupada gives an example of how this is possible by practice in this lecture. He said there are some, in South India, there are some dancers. And they dance at the same time they balance a pot of water on their head while they dance. And they don't drop the water, they don't spill a drop, and they keep on dancing. The Prabhupada said, so in the same way we can do all our activities in this world at the same time, think of Krishna. And he quotes Sri Rupa Goswami. Sri Rupa Goswami says, just like a wife who has a paramour, she's always thinking, she does her duties at home very nicely, but in her mind she's thinking, when am I going to meet my lover? So this is how we should think. We do our service, we do our material duties in this world, but we think, when am I going to actually love Krishna and see Krishna? Prabhupada also gives the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a magistrate, a judge. He had 10 children or more, I don't know, something like that, around 10 to round it off. And he was always in the court judging his cases. So Prabhupada said, how is it possible for a magistrate to write so many books? Because he was always thinking of Krishna. He was always absorbed. So Prabhupada says we have to practice this. Whatever we're doing, we have to think. Any other examples of somebody like that who is doing his material duties, so-called? Yeah. Okay, the office lady who types behind the desk. Yes. She's always looking, thinking of her appearance, but although she's doing her work, she's thinking of her appearance. Okay, yeah. Right. Madhavan Puri. 3:30 in Bhagavad Gita. The cashier, he's counting money, but he's detached from it. Yeah. Also, when I was a new devotee, I was typing Bhagavad Gita. It's interesting, though. This is quite different. This is devotional service. But Prabhupada, because he had the composing machine, the typesetting machine, he wanted it to go 24 hours. So we were working on shifts to do the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So each of us had, three or four of us ladies, we were typing. And Prabhupada told us that when you're typing, it's exactly the same as chanting japa. He said, you're chanting japa when you're typing. He was encouraging us. And so actually, it's a fact. If you do service for Krishna, if it's for Krishna, then it's actually non-different from japa. It can be as absorbing as japa. So we'll go on here, verse 22. So we can see the mind of Kardama is revealed from his smile. He's thinking of Krishna. Verse 22. After having unmistakably known the decision of the queen as well as that of Devahuti, the emperor most gladly gave his daughter to the sage, whose host of virtues was equaled by hers. So just, Prabhupada says in his lecture again on this verse, that if you want to marry your daughter to someone, three things are required. It says sanction of the mother, the sanction of the father, and the sanction of the daughter. All three. Nowadays, you see, it's just the boy and the girl, they meet, and by agreement, they get married. But the Vedic system was that the parents have to also agree, because they know better than the girl. You know, they've been around, they've seen life, and they know the qualities of the person. So here it says, for Kardama, guna gana dhyaya, uncountable qualities he had, a great yogi. But Dadao Tuyam, she was equal to him. So she also had so many uncountable qualities. So therefore it's very important before you get married to find out what the other person is like and what is their goal. Suppose we find that in ISKCON it's a problem that the husband He wants to do puja, the wife wants money, she wants to do business, so it just doesn't work out. Or one wants to enjoy without rules and the other one wants to follow the rules, so then it just doesn't work. So before agreeing to marry, you have to make sure that the other is on the same level as you. Of course, in the Vedic system, there was no social contact, so they did this by astrology. So they were able to tell which one, what is it the other one's like, even without meeting them. So another point the Prabhupada made about this marriage between Kardam and Devahuti is that he was poverty stricken. You can just picture the scene. He's in rags, he's living in poverty, he hasn't had a bath and who knows when, and he's got matted locks, and here comes this princess who's got jewels and gold and silk and a crown, and she's going to marry this guy who's a beggar, like looks like a beggar. So this is Vedic culture. It's quite amazing when you think about it. These kind of things wouldn't happen nowadays. So Prabhupada said that she's a daughter of an emperor and she's marrying this ascetic, so then she has to become like him. Of course, after a while she saw, actually, although he appeared like this, he was so powerful, he made a huge palace for her, which was unbelievable, which could fly in the air and so many things. So looks are deceiving. You cannot judge by external appearance. So this is one lesson we learned from this chapter, that we cannot judge a person by his external appearance. And we will see this, how Swayambhuva Manu, he's completely different, but his heart is the same as Kardama. We'll see this later on. Yes, but he's a sage. He's a yogi. He's a Brahman yogi. Yogis are different. They may sit in their cave for years and meditate up in the Himalayas. It's not exactly the type of Brahman. There's different kinds of Brahmins. So he's a yogi, a Brahmana yogi. Out in the forest, living in the forest. And we'll see. We also heard how Devahuti, she became like that after serving him. Or maybe we will hear. Yeah, we'll hear in the next chapter how she also became dirty, and her hair was matted, and she was completely, and her health was finished. And so many things. Huh? Yeah, right. It's very similar. It's very similar. We don't have the matted hair, but our health is finished. So anyway. We'll go on. Empress Shatarupa lovingly gave most valuable presents suitable for the occasion, such as jewelry, clothes, and household articles in dowry to the bride and bridegroom. Thus relieved of his responsibility, by handing over his daughter to a suitable man, Swayambhuva Manu, his mind agitated by feelings of separation, embraced his affectionate daughter with both his arms. 25. The emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter. Therefore, tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." So on Janamashtami day here at the Krishna Balaram, Dinabandhu gave a very interesting class on Krishna, Lord Krishna, and he gave the example of Indian marriages, how it's the marriage day, they finish the wedding, the marriage ceremony, and the husband and wife, they're going off in the car. Now it's not a chariot, but it's a car. And they go for a while, they go a few meters, and they come back, the girl jumps out, she embraces her mother and father and her sisters, they all start crying. Then she goes back in the car, they drive a little bit farther, they come back, she jumps out of the car, she embraces her mother and father. Not now? That's what Dinabandhu said. I don't know. Maybe it's, yeah, like drama. No, it's not. Okay, she says it's not like that. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Oh, okay. Well, they follow the car. Right. Okay. So they follow the car. Yes. In China, really? in Taiwan. They're very attached like that. When the girl leaves the home, that's it, and they're very upset. Banamali, how is it in South India? Tell us.
I remember my grandpa used to call my mother like Amba, like mother.
Acha. Acha. So the grandfather used to call the daughter as Amba, or mother. So this Indian cult, this Vedic culture is quite... Point is that they're very attached. Even though he was the emperor of the world, they're so emotional, this Vedic culture. Very attached to the daughter, drenching her head with tears. So verse 26, 27, after asking and obtaining the great sage's permission to leave, the monarch mounted his chariot with his wife and started for his capital, followed by his retinue. Along the way, he saw the prosperity of the tranquil seers of beautiful hermitages, and both the charming banks of the Saraswati, the river so agreeable to saintly persons. So has anyone seen such ashrams and hermitages in India? You've seen Patri, huh? Where's that? In which place? Himalayas? In the Himalayas. You can see such ashrams.
We saw the cave of Yasakdo.
Yeah, he also saw that, yeah.
Who's that?
Patri saw the... In Badri. Oh, a different cave, well?
It was yesterday's, but it was like his place of birth.
Oh, yeah, okay, different cave, where he was born. Okay. So yes, these places still exist. After millions and billions of years, this is quite a long time that this happened, the beginning of creation. Okay, so verse 28. Overjoyed to know of his arrival, his subjects came forth from Brahmavarta to greet the returning Lord with songs, prayers, and musical instruments. The city of Vahishmati, rich in all kinds of wealth, was so called because Lord Vishnu's hair dropped there from his body when he manifested himself as Lord Boar. As he shook his body, this very hair fell and turned into blades of evergreen kush grass and kasha, another kind of grass used for mats, by means of which the sages worship Lord Vishnu after defeating the demons who had interfered with the performance of their sacrifices. Manu spread a seat of kushas and kashas and worshiped the Lord, the personality of Godhead, by whose grace he obtained the rule of the terrestrial globe. So this is very significant. Here's the emperor. He's coming into his capital. Everybody's glorifying him and praising him. They're coming to meet him. And what does he do? Does he go to his palace? Oh, finally, I'm home. Let me have a nice feast and have a shower and take some rest. No. First thing he does is he worships Krishna. First thing he thinks of Krishna. Just like Kardama. You never forget Krishna. So Prabhupada says in the purport, in the middle, no one can achieve wealth, opulence, good birth, beautiful body, or nice education without the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, those who are in possession of such valuable facilities must acknowledge their gratefulness to the Lord by worshipping Him and offering what they have received from Him. When such acknowledgement is given, either by a family, nation, or society, their abode becomes almost like Vaikuntha, and it becomes free from the operation of the threefold miseries of this material world. In the modern age, the mission of Krishna consciousness is for everyone to acknowledge the supremacy of Lord Krishna. Whatever one has in his possession must be considered a gift by the grace of the Lord. Everyone, therefore, should engage in devotional service through Krishna consciousness. If one wants to be happy and peaceful in his position, either as a householder or citizen, or member of human society, one must promote devotional service for the pleasure of the Lord. So how to get happiness and peace? Try to make Krishna happy, and then you're happy. So who in this room has received a gift from Krishna that you're grateful for? Yes, Sankirtan has, Patri has. Yes, what's your gift, Narasimha Devi? Krishna consciousness is the gift. Yeah. And Patri, you have some ability? Krishna has given himself. Well, you're most fortunate. The deities. Okay. This is the best gift. Vanamali. Prabhupada, oh yeah. That's what somebody said on, when was it, on Janamashtami or Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, it was. That, yes, yes. Prabhupada's one of my god sisters. She was speaking this year in Vyasa Puja. And she said that on the birth of Krishna, Krishna gave some was giving in charity, and he gave us Srila Prabhupada the next day. Huh? Gola? Oh, her name is Gola. Her name is Lola. Lola. Her name is Lola. Yeah, so she said that Krishna, they were giving in charity, and the charity was Srila Prabhupada. We got Prabhupada from Krishna. That's the very best charity that Krishna could give on his birthday. And the next day he gave in charity. Nandotsav. Big celebration. Yes, what other gift? Yes.
New life.
New life. Rebirth.
Real,
yes.
Real friendships.
Marangopa. Slap in the face? For foolishness. Yeah, sometimes it happens. Like devotees, they lose everything before they become a devotee. They won't surrender until everything's gone. And now, anyway, I have nothing to give up now, so I might as well become a devotee. Yeah. He gives everything, just like my husband. I left, and then 2 months later, he became a devotee, because I was his source of support. And so then he was a hippie, he wouldn't work, you know, that was his philosophy, and he was dedicated to not working. So therefore, he had to join and become a devotee, because it's not the same as work, actually. Yeah, Satyavati, what gift did you get?
Association of devotees.
And to share realization, yes. This is the most, in fact, this is what all the devotees are praying for. When Krishna asks them, what do you want? I just want to serve the devotees, get their association. Prahlad, Juva, all these devotees, they just want association. Pariksit Maharaj, when he was asked, you know, he wasn't asked, but he was saying, my next life, if I have to take birth, I want association of devotees, love for the Lord, and I want to be very merciful to the to all other living entities. So that was his prayer for his next birth. He said, he wasn't thinking, okay, I'm going back to Godhead. Next life, this is what I want. And so, yeah, what other gifts do we have? Sankirtan. In Tapovan. Badrinath, one old lady. She serves the sadhus now and guests. Now she makes prasadam. Okay, so before she was doing austerities for many, many years, and now she came down from Badrinath, and she's serving the sadhus, prasadam, and the guests. Higher realization. Parama, I think Paramananda.
That was another point, prasadam. You've been given
prasadam. Okay, another point. Our gift is prasadam. Yeah, Marvin Puri. Books of Prabhupada. Yes?
Happiness of devotional service.
Happiness of devotional service. Yes. Actually, this purport is also about, yes, whatever is in your possession. For us, what other possessions do we have? Yes. That's okay, go on. Accordion. Accordion, yes. That's what I was thinking, yeah. Yes, he seems to tell us something. That's right. Right. So he got an accordion, and somehow his hidden talent surfaced. And he's blessing everyone with his wonderful kirtan at the samadhi. So yes, we're very fortunate. He gave you this gift. Yes. Yeah, Parama Khan. Oh, right. Yeah, you must have been sitting near each other.
So every time he makes a point, I always think of something. So
right.
Strongly connected with the same.
Okay.
But,
yes.
The fact is that what he's saying, yes, we've had all our desires fulfilled.
Yes, we've had all our desires fulfilled. Yes. Simply by coming in contact with Krishna. So that's why we're happy and peaceful. And we're going to read, I think, on the next verse, more about this too. Anything else? Any other gifts or things we can thank Krishna for? Yeah. The holy name, yes.
Because he was staying 50 years in the
cave. Oh, and I don't think you did. Did we hear about the one who was 50 years in the cave? No.
Okay, so, but he was staying in the cave.
Yeah.
And once I was climbing that place. You know, cave,
where is this?
In Badrinath.
In Badrinath. There's some guy 50 years in the cave.
So, 50 years.
Okay, yeah. What's your realization for the last 50 years?
50 years for me, it's not possible. Just give me free stuff.
Yeah, so just give me one sentence or two of your realization. Once a year he comes to Allahabad. Yeah, because it's a big one.
Staying in the snow.
In the snow, yeah.
So, just tell me.
What does he eat? I always wondered.
He was just eating and doing
Shiva Mantra.
Kartikeya
Mantra.
But then actually I asked, Haribo.
Haribo. This is his realization.
So I said, just see what fortune.
Yes.
I'll give you a shortcut.
Really?
To get that one, we need to spend 50 years for it.
Yeah, that's right. We should really understand how fortunate we are. We got this guy, 50 years up in the cave, and he realized to chant Hare Krishna, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, this is the essence.
And he had one small murti of Krishna playing.
Oh. So on the lap he had Kartikeya Didi, and on Kartikeya's lap was Krishna playing the flute. Yeah, so this is, we're so fortunate. And of course, what else can we do in Kali Yuga? We can't do anything that these people are doing. There has to be a mercy for us, some special mercy.
Also, there are another Baba who made posterities.
Yes, yes. And they'll have to take many births.
Heart of mothers.
Heart of mothers who feed you. Which mothers?
Like the heart of congregation we have.
Congregation. Oh, so his gift from Krishna is he's got so many mothers who feed him from the congregation. So, and you left your real mother, right? So it was in India, it's hard to leave your mother. A mother and son, it's very strong attachment. So now he got so many mothers. He did not lose. Vedic culture, the mother and sons, just like Devahuti and Kapila, very, very strong. Okay, we're going to go on now. Verse 32, which is also a very significant verse in purport. Having entered the city of Barhishmati, in which he had previously lived, Manu entered his palace, which was filled with an atmosphere that eradicated the three miseries of material existence. So this purport, I'll ask you the question, that when you become a devotee in Krishna consciousness, all your miseries are gone forever? Or do we still have miseries? She says, you get much more. Parvati says they're compounded. What do you say, Mahavendapuri? Okay, we've been given Krishna consciousness to handle them better. They're still there, but we've been given Krishna consciousness to handle them better. Yes, in the beginning of Krishna consciousness is actually almost finished. Actually, we don't remember what it was like before. We've been here so long protected that we don't remember actually what those miseries are like, being without Krishna. Such a miserable life. If you can see it when you see the other people who don't practice Krishna consciousness, that they're so very tragic lives. Very tragic. Yeah. Oh, so much anxiety. So much anxiety. Yeah, sankirtan. Door to door. Yes. How people are suffering. So such misery. The misery of material existence. And they think we are so fortunate we have our own house, we have our dog, So Prabhupada says, the material world or material existential life is filled with threefold miseries. Miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to natural disturbances, and miseries inflicted by other living entities. Human society is meant to create a spiritual atmosphere by spreading the spirit of Krishna consciousness. What's the spirit? Krishna consciousness. Just hit me right now. What is that spirit? Yeah. To give Krishna to others. By spreading the spirit of giving Krishna to others. Service attitude. Yeah, I would say service attitude. Madan Gopal. Huh? They couldn't the atmosphere. Yeah, right. That's a general description of what we want.
Spirit of true equality.
That's right. We don't see bodies. We see people equally as spirit soul. Mm-hmm. Glorifying Krishna. So the miseries of material existence cannot affect the status of Krishna consciousness. It is not that the miseries of material world completely vanish when one takes to Krishna consciousness, but for one who is Krishna conscious, the miseries of material existence have no effect. So if they have effect, that means we're not Krishna conscious. And conclude, we cannot stop the miseries of the material atmosphere, but Krishna consciousness is the antiseptic method to protect us from being affected by the miseries of material existence. There was one new devotee last summer. I won't tell her name, but she was a bhakti, and then she got initiated, and as soon as she got initiated, she got a very heavy fever, and she got really sick, and she was delirious, and she said, "Oh, I didn't know you got sick after you got initiated." She says, "I thought, okay, now I'm initiated, so my disease is finished." So we have these misconceptions. So this misconception is being dealt with here. It's not that the miseries are gone, but they don't affect someone who is Krishna conscious. For Krishna conscious person, both living in heaven and living in hell are equal. How Swayambhuva Manu created an atmosphere wherein he was not affected by material miseries is explained in the following verses. So some people may think, well, he's so rich, that's why he's not affected. He's got everything you could desire in this world. He's got people glorifying him. He's living in a beautiful place. So that's why he has no miseries. But no. Because there are so many rich people in this world, but they're not happy. They still have to suffer. And they suffer just as much as the poor people. So there's a verse in the 10th canto, 10:87:40. It's a very nice verse by the personified Vedas. And it explains how the devotee is free from miseries. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts, since it is you alone who control this good and bad fortune. So he sees it's Krishna. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. Every day he fills his ears with your glories, which are recited in each age by the unbroken succession of Manu's descendants, and thus you become his ultimate salvation. So Manu is in there too, that it's passed down from Manu. Now the verse before that says that the impersonalists suffer. They will suffer birth after birth. And in the purport it says, well, why is this? Why should I? It seems like if you're so renounced that you're performing austerities, then you should be exempt from suffering. But no. Here it says that impersonalistic jnanis and yogis do not qualify for full relief from the reactions of karma, a privilege reserved only for those who are tvadavagami, pure devotees, constantly engaged in hearing and chanting topics concerning personality of Godhead. So this is the devotees. They can fearlessly ignore the apparent good and bad reactions of the work they do only for the Supreme Lord's pleasure, and they can equally ignore whatever others may say about them, whether praise or condemnation. A humble Vaishnava, absorbed in the pleasure of Sankirtan, pays little heed to praise of himself, which he assumes mistaken, and happily accepts all criticism which he deems appropriate. So this is the view of the devotee. How he's not affected by miseries, because it's misery if someone criticizes you. It's a big misery. It's huge misery. More misery than some material disease or something. If your name is defamed. So verse 33. Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed life with his wife and subjects and fulfilled his desires without being disturbed by unwanted principles contrary to the process of religion. Celestial musicians and their wives sang in chorus about the pure reputation of the emperor, and early in the morning, every day, he used to listen to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a loving heart. So the end of paragraph 1, Srila Prabhupada says, the Vedic principles are designed in such a way conditioned souls who have come to this material existence may be guided in fulfilling their material desires, at the same time be liberated and go back to Godhead, back to home. Paragraph 2. It is understood Emperor Swayambhuva Manu enjoyed his household life by following these principles. So in the morning he used to hear the musicians singing not only his glories, the glories of the Lord, the glories of the Lord with Chennai music. Prabhupada said you can still see this in India in some places. And we saw in Jaipur at the palace of the king, they have Chennai music every morning, but it's in the temple for the deities. Used to have Chennai music here in Vrindavan. Mayapur they have still. Yeah, Mayapur they still have Chennai music at sunrise, right?
Sunrise.
Not at sunset too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different ragas.
Different ragas, okay. Yes. Veena in where? In South India? Srirangam. Srirangam. Yes, Pachi. The Gurukulis. And Maharaj. Gita Govinda, wow.
Uh-huh.
Every Saturday. Big plate of Mahaprasad for all the Gurukulis. Wow. I heard that in some temples of South India they sing the prayers of personified Vedas to wake up the Lord. Or either in the morning or at the end of the 4 months when he's sleeping. Prayers of personified Vedas. So anyway, this is still going on. Then near the end of I think this is paragraph 2. Paragraph 2. The atmosphere created by the Sankirtan movement, yes, is the end of paragraph 2, lives in their hearts. And while sleeping, they also dream of the singing and glorification of the Lord. In such a way, perfection of Krishna consciousness can be attained. This practice is very old. As learned from this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, millions of years ago, Swayambhuvamana used to avail himself of this opportunity to live householder life in the peace and prosperity of a Krishna conscious atmosphere. So Prabhupada says that this is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, the temple worship of the royal family. But you would never guess which verse it's in relationship to. Temple worship by the royal family. Prabhupada quotes that in the third paragraph. He doesn't quote the verse, but he says temple near the end. Temple worship by the royal family is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, where it is stated those who fail to achieve success in bhakti yoga within one life are given a chance to take birth in the next life. Suchiram shimatam gehe. So this is from Bhagavad Gita. It's hard, indirect. But that's what it means here. Shuchinam shimatam gehe. That you get such a birth where you can always remember Krishna. So, Prabhupada made the same program for us. We should understand that the program that Prabhupada made is millions and billions of years old. You get up in the morning, you have kirtan, arti, you have class. In the evening, you have kirtan, arti, class. And then we used to have Krishna book every night. It was a temple function. We would sit and drink milk. And we would have Krishna book reading while we would be drinking milk. That was part of the program, our temple program. Everybody had to go for Krishna book reading at night before you sleep. You used to do that here too. Yeah. So the idea is that the Prabhupada, he used to talk about his childhood, where in the villages they would go and they would hear discourses on Bhagavatam, Ramayana, Mahabharata. And they would talk about it on the way home, and then they'd go to sleep and they would dream about the pastimes of the Lord. So even now, Jananivas, he told me he reads Krishna book to the deities every night before they go to sleep. And he's been doing it for 20 years or so. So the deities are hearing Krishna book every night in Radha Madhava. Yeah. Jyotirmayi. Uh-huh. So, yeah. Family atmosphere. Gurudas would come to the ladies' ashram and read Krishna book. And Jamuna would go to the men's ashram and read Krishna book. Jamuna. Yeah.
And
it was quite different. It was quite a different atmosphere. I know, also beginning, I used to go in the van, in the Sankirtan van. It was everybody together, men and women together, brahmacharis. I was a bhaktin. My Sankirtan leader was Giriraj Swami. And he was... We would stay out from 10 in the morning till 11. We would go back at 6 for arti and and prasad, and then go back out from 7 to 11:30 at night. It's maybe between 5 and 10 of us regulars, just Harinam. So it's quite ecstatic. But there was no. We used to eat lunch. He would tell us stories while we were sitting out in the park eating lunch, and he would tell us. Giraj, he was Das that time. He was Brahmachari. He used to tell us all kinds of stories from Krishna book and Bhagavatam, and we'd have our lunch, and then we'd go back to kirtan. Yeah, it was very nice. One time, he told me, "You're dancing so nicely today, Mataji." Another time he said, "You're singing really wonderfully." You know, he'd always encourage me in my service. So anyway, it was quite different in those days, quite different. Anyway, the atmosphere of Krishna consciousness created by the Sankirtan movements lives in their hearts. And this is the spirit of Krishna consciousness, actually. The spirit of Krishna consciousness. It was actually, because we were thinking, this is so revolutionary, that we're creating a revolution, and we're the revolutionaries. And it's an emergency, and we're going to change the world, you know? We had that feeling. So, yes, all these things that Prabhupada started, we can see that they're here, right in Shastra. They're being practiced for millions of years. It's not something new that Prabhupada made up himself. But everything is based on Shastras. So an example. So here it's talking about how the... that was the previous verse. How the devotees... No, it's this verse. How devotees are not affected by miseries. But that was the last verse. Anyway, it's still nice. So I've got a nice quote here from 11:12:12. Krishna is speaking to Uddhava about the gopis. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization, like rivers merging into the ocean, and are thus not aware of material names and forms. Similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies, or of this world, or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. Yeah, it's very interesting. So in those days also, they used to call the women gopis. Quite, the gopis are doing this, the gopis are doing that. So, quite a different mindset there. Anyway, we'll go on here. Verse 34. Thus, Swayambhuva Manu was a saintly king. Although absorbed in material happiness, he was not dragged to the lowest grade of life, for he always enjoyed his material happiness in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. 35. Consequently, although his duration of life gradually came to an end, his long life, consisting of a Manvantara era, was not spent in vain, since he ever engaged in hearing, contemplating, writing down, and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. Prabhupada says, as freshly prepared food is very tasteful, but if kept for 3 or 4 hours, becomes stale and tasteless, so the existence of material enjoyment can endure as long as life is fresh. But at the fag end of life, everything becomes tasteless, and everything appears to be vain and painful. So this is the problem with today's modern civilization of people. They've worked their whole lives without hardly any rest. And then they become old, and they retire, and they think, okay, now we can enjoy life. We're retired now. But they can't enjoy anything. They can't eat properly. They want to go visiting different places all over the world. Now you see these really old people going to the beach in America. But what's the use? You know, you can't enjoy. The body's finished. You've worked your whole life and finished your body, and now you want to enjoy. This is material life. Life of Emperor Swayambhuva Manu, however, was not tasteless. As he grew older, his life remained as fresh as in the beginning because of his continued Krishna consciousness. The life of a man in Krishna consciousness is always fresh. So that was like the description of Srila Prabhupada when he was dancing in Rath Yatra in London. He said sometimes he was just like an 18-year-old boy. But actually he was like 78, his actual age. But you couldn't tell the way he was dancing. So this is the proof the life of Srila Prabhupada, he started his career at the age of 70. Just imagine. When other people are ready to die, he's starting his world movement at the age of 70. It is said that the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, and its business is to reduce the duration of everyone's life. But the sunrise and sunset cannot diminish the life of one who engages in Krishna consciousness. Swayambhu Vamanu's life did not become stale after some time, for he engaged himself always in chanting about and meditating upon Lord Vishnu. So usually this verse that we quote all the time, Ayur Harati Vai Pungsam, it's in connection with death of a devotee. But here, it's in connection with old age. That not only is the devotee protected from death, he's protected from old age. That's what this verse means, Ayur Harati Vai Pungsam, that even old age he will not experience like the others. He will not experience the same way. The time cannot touch him, either his death or his old age. So Swayambhu Vamanu is the greatest yogi because he never wasted his time. It's especially mentioned here, Vishnu Kurvato Bhuvata Katha. When he talked only of Krishna and Vishnu, personality of Godhead. When he heard something, it was about Krishna. When he meditated, it was upon Krishna and his activities. So you can see here the similarity between Manu and Kardama Muni. One's an ascetic, a Brahmin out in the forest. The other's the emperor in charge of the world. But where is their mind? It's on Krishna. Both of them, their mind is the same. Their heart is the same. Externally, you cannot judge somebody. You may say, oh no, he's engaged in, you know, ruling the empire. He's out there doing austerities. But the both of them, what's on their mind is Krishna. And that's their priority. Priority of their lives. And that's why his life did not go in vain, and that's why he didn't experience old age. So here's a nice question we can consider. What makes life fresh in your old age? What is it that keeps you going when these other old people are ready to die and they're retiring and they're finished their work and they're retiring, they're giving up everything? So what makes a devotee keep on going? Adi Purusha. You have something to look forward to. Yes, that makes life very fresh. Sankirtan. Trying to please Krishna. Whole life was spent not for himself, but to please Krishna. Yes, you can please Krishna in many ways. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction to one place, it says that Krishna consciousness is performed not with the senses, but with the mind and intelligence. Right. Paramkarna? Oh, I saw your head on. I saw it was up there. Okay, I'm Puri. Which Maharaj? Satsrup Das Maharaj. Yes, it's a natural thing that happens in my life too. I was just running around my whole life, and then now I can. It's my intelligence that's developing. Use the mind and intelligence. After so many years of using your senses for Krishna, then the senses are pacified and also, as you say, finished, fatigued. So, no question of doing anything else. Yeah. Indraduna Maharaj, Bhakti Chitta Maharaj. And Jayapataka Maharaj. He's all over the world. 3 days in one place, 3 days in the next place. When he was on the Ganga Safari, he was giving out something for giving you vitality and energy, some vitamins. He was giving it out to all the devotees. And they said, here Maharaj, you need? He says, no, my problem is I have too much energy. Because I don't need that stuff.
He doesn't stay for 3 days, he stays for 3 hours.
3 hours in one place, yes. He must be cursed too, just like Narada Muni. Sometimes not even 3 hours. I know, I met him, actually it was so funny. 1 year I was traveling around Europe and I was meeting him every place I went. But I would stay like for a week or something and he would be there for, you know, just breeze in, initiate a few people and breeze out. And it was in Switzerland. Sweden I met him, in Sweden. Yeah, in Stockholm. Was it Stockholm? Yeah, no. It was in the Korsnäs. I met him there. Yeah, he was just there for like a... It wasn't even a day. Maybe one night it was. And he was his lecture, he was saying, yeah, well, I was just in Peru for 3 days, and we talked about this. And then we went to this country, and it was like, you know, within 15 minutes, all over the world practically. So yes, some devotees, they have this energy, this spiritual energy that they've gotten just by... And I remember him when he was in Mayapur. When I was in Calcutta, he was in Mayapur. And he was out plowing fields with the bullocks. And he was very, very thin, very skinny. Skinny devotee. But yes, he always had so tremendous energy for Krishna's service. Bhakti to all these devotees, Indradyumna Maharaj, all of them, quite amazing. So yes, this is how we become new and fresh, even in our old age. When you look at them, they don't seem old. At least not to me. Of course, I'm the sage. Maybe that's why. But they seem like they have so much energy for Krishna's service. This is all we see. We see fresh meaning in everything. When the more you become in Krishna consciousness, we go closer to Krishna, and we increase our ability to see the hand of Krishna in everything. So this is what happens when you spend your life in Krishna consciousness. And we see whatever happens to us is bringing us closer to Krishna. This is a vision of the devotees in old age. 36. Yeah, and for me too, I started teaching at the age of 50. So there again, started my last career in Krishna consciousness, first of pujari, then book distribution, then mother, and now teaching. The age of 50, and my son tells me, "You're too old. You should just stay home and cook for me the whole day." What do you think you're doing preaching the whole day? You're supposed to be my mother, you know. Anyway, he's always encouraging me to cook for him. Verse 36. Well, this year he surrendered to cooking for himself. He cooked lasagna yesterday. Anyway, he passed his time, we're talking about Manu now, which lasted 71 cycles of the four ages, 71 times 4,320,000 years, always thinking of Vasudev and always engaged in matters regarding Vasudev. Thus he transcended the three destinations. Now, it's an interesting point here in this purport about the three destinations. The beginning of the purport. Three destinations are meant for persons who are under the control of the three modes of material nature. These destinations are sometimes described as the awakened, the dreaming, and the unconscious stages. In Bhagavad Gita, the three destinations are described as destinations of persons in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So when I was reading this, I was thinking, well, maybe there's some connection here between the first group of destinations and the second group of destinations. What do you think so? I was thinking like awakened means goodness, dreaming means passion, and unconscious means ignorance, or corresponds to, just seems to. Because, what do you think, Mayavendipuri?
I think
Susupti, sleep.
Yeah,
deep sleep.
I'm sure. We only run coma, it's like coma.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't read it in the Bhagavatam that
Susupti. Interesting. So I guess you couldn't really call it ignorance.
No, it's like...
Must be...
Devil.
Yeah. Okay.
Susupti,
you think. So we can't really correspond it to ignorance. What do you think, Sankirtan? You don't know. No, Adi Purusha, you're Sanskrit. There was a seminar about this verse, or this Susupti... It is, okay, so it is correlated. Susupti is in the mode of ignorance. When you're completely... Swapna means dream. Swapna is passion. And Jagrati is... Jagrati, awake. Awake is goodness. Sleeps without dreams.
More inactivity.
Yeah, completely. So that's why they say in Isha Upanishad that the impersonalists go to the lowest. So because that's... like unconscious, like the trees, like the rocks. So that's the stage they go to. 37. Therefore, Vidura, how can persons completely under the shelter of Lord Krishna in devotional service be put into miseries pertaining to the body, the mind, nature, and other men and living creatures? It's not possible. if you're a pure devotee. In reply to questions asked by certain sages, he, Swayambhuva Manu, out of compassion for all living entities, taught the diverse sacred duties of men in general and the different varnas and ashramas. So that was his particular service, or his purpose of incarnation, to teach the dharma of living entities. Dharma nana vidachubam, all the auspicious dharmas. I have spoken to you of the wonderful character of Swayambhuva Manu, the original king, whose reputation is worthy of description. Please hear as I speak of the flourishing of his daughter, Devahuti. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments on today's verses? Panamali?
The voltage is not affected for the devotees because...
The what?
Voltage.
Old age, okay. Yeah, devotees, when they see death, actually they're very happy when they get to old age, because it means the closer you come to Krishna, going back to Krishna. Because our whole life we've been doing austerities for Krishna, so then we anticipate that we will join Krishna at the end of our lives. Yeah, so the devotees, the older devotees, their mind is fresh like a teenager, because they didn't perform so sinful activities and they're always being purified. And it's very, just see the end of the life of the materialistic people in these old age homes. It's terrible. They're just suffering like anything. And they have no control. They're being forced to eat. They're being forced to do so many things they don't want to do. So this is the life of the... You see, I've seen my mother-in-law in the old age home. It's so terrible. Yeah, they're just being forced against their will. Yeah. And your ashram, oh yes, yes. Somebody, that, yeah, I heard about that. Someone said he was a sinful person, I don't know. Somebody told me who lives in that ashram, that, yeah, they were saying that he...
I saw that once I went, he still cannot leave the body.
Cannot leave the body. So what torture? Of course, hopefully he'll get a better birth because he's dying in Vrindavan in this life. If not go back to Krishna, at least doesn't... I don't know if he'll go back to Krishna. He might become one of these animals we see here. What's that?
Bindu Sarovar.
Oh, did you find out? Did you research?
Yes, it's circled by the
river. The Saraswati, right.
So this city cannot be in...
Bhuvaneshwar. Oh, the Saraswati go west?
Oh, yes.
Arabian Sea. Oh, okay. So then it can't be there. It has to be on that side somewhere. Okay, so those people... who said that are an illusion. So it's over on that side. Hmm. Okay. So yeah, Sankirtandas. They gave a talk. Both spiritual masters spoke. Right. The spiritual master of the husband said, now you will be in charge of my daughter, of the girl.
The girl, yeah. And the other spiritual master objected.
He objected? Oh. Well, we in ISKCON, everything is, we're going through the stages of growth right now, perhaps even teenage growth. So our movement is not quite fixed. But eventually, Prabhupada said, in the third generation, then it will be quite better. It will have pure devotees and all sorts of things. But until then, we just have to take what we can from the Vanashram system and use it that is helpful for us in Krishna consciousness. So it seems like the father of the girl objected that to give away the girl to the husband. Is this the case? The guru is the father.
Yeah.
So the father is saying, no, she's... So if you look at it from Shastric point of view, then it would seem that it would be the husband. It would seem that way. Quite embarrassing, yeah, in the middle of the marriage, huh? I think it might be a sign for their future. Hopefully not. Hopefully it won't be a sign of the future. Sometimes these things happen, you know. But according to the Shastric point of view, the father is saying goodbye. And the husband is getting the...
Yeah, but it's the guru here.
Yeah, it's the guru. Yeah, the guru can't say goodbye. Yeah, it's quite, quite complicated. Anyway, the wife has to be really intelligent to figure it out. how maybe a case of diplomacy here, that she will have to somehow be so expert to get along with, to pacify both the gurus and the husband at the same time. Kind of like Jopi and her five husbands or something. I would say it would be the wife's would have to do so, or even the husband can figure something out. Yeah. Well, you can't just take, you can't just marry a guru, you know. Just because the wife gets married doesn't mean that you inherit her guru. But of sorts you do. Yeah. Yeah, like Vajrabihari is a good example. He's got one guru, and his wife's got another, and it's always been that way. And they both of them have gone through three gurus, I think. And they never had the same one. But and again, like she lost her last one, and still she didn't go to the same guru as her husband. She still got a different one. But somehow, you know, just it's Kali Yuga, you know. What are you going to do? Everyone has their own. Yeah. Oh yes, he's really a good preacher on that.
And while I was husband.
Right. Interesting. So Jesus' teachings, the husband is the head of the family, of the wife, and the guru is the head of the...
The wife is the head of the children.
And wife is the head of the children.
The husband is the head of the wife, and the guru is the head.
So there's like a disciplic succession there. Parampara. There, the children listen to the mother, and the mother listens to the husband listens to the guru. That was interesting. That reminds me of a story of Giriraj Maharaj with his parents. They were here in Bombay. And They were talking to some businessman, and Giriraj Swami's father and mother were somehow meeting with the businessman and their son, Giriraj Swami. And so the businessman they were just talking, and Giriraj Swami's father was saying, the process in our family is that the husband gives the money to the wife, and the wife gives it to the son. And so there's also another disciplic succession there of money. And the son gives it to Krishna. So that was... Yeah, hopefully. Well, Giriraj Swami was like that. His father asked him to come home. He would give him $1,000,000. He refused. He was with Prabhupada. Said no, and he was such an austere in Bombay. I went there. I was in Bombay, and they were living in this indescribable hut. And I won't describe it, but it was indescribable, and it was very, very austere. Huge rats, and everybody was sick. And one time I saw Giriraj. At that time he was Das, Brahmachari, and he was lying underneath the table. And I said, what are you doing down there? He said, it's the only place, I got malaria, I got a really high fever, it's the only place I can go where nobody's going to step on me. And then he refused $1,000,000 of his father. So you can just see the character of these devotees. Quite wonderful. Anyway, these things are going on. Disciplic succession. In ISKCON right now, we have to take as much as we can, from Varnashram, as much as we're ready to do, we can do. And some people are at different levels. And then, of course, we also always have to remember that the Vaishnava, his first duty is to Supreme Lord and to the Guru, and pray for intelligence. Like in this case of the different gurus, you really have to pray to somebody for help in your relationships there. But Vajrabihari and his wife, they're a very nice example of Grihastha life. Very good example. And what I've seen, and I live next door, and they're very good. They're exemplary.
They're good boss.
Good boss. Yeah. Yeah, anybody else have a comment or question? Adi Purusha.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I thought, that struck me too. Ruvata, Kurvata, acting. What kind of act he's doing, yes. In his old age, right, or his whole life. Writing down. So he was writing also. Yeah, that struck me also, because usually it's not one of the nine processes of devotional service, writing, chanting. Yeah, it shows you Prabhupada's mood. That's very good, you caught that. Prabhupada's mood, he was always writing. He was always writing pastimes of the Lord, chanting, contemplating, hearing. So we can take an example from this. This is what we can do in our old age also. Hearing, contemplating, writing down and chanting pastimes of the Lord. Now, it doesn't have to be old age. You can do it any time. But actually, Prabhupada says that's the first duty of sannyasis. He says that in second canto, to write something, to give a literary contribution for society, and also to discuss. Six Goswamis were always discussing pastimes of the Lord at Radha Damodar. Okay, any other comments or questions? On the dowry? Yes, it was given. Yeah, I know. I had that same question, you know, because it seems like, you know, I guess it, you know, whatever happens, you always end up in the same position. Probably gave it away.
And dowry is given to the girl.
To the girl, yeah. So, yeah, Prabhupada said that.
But she became emaciated and just...
Yeah, she didn't sound like she was enjoying the dowry much. She didn't have... Gave in charity, that's what I was thinking also. But, yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that because... I was studying fourth canto, and it was saying that Sati, she wanted to go to the sacrifice. Everybody was going to the sacrifice, and she also wanted to go to visit her sisters. And it said in the verse that she would wear the ornaments given by her father. So Prabhupada said that Shiva was materially nothing. So he never gave her any. He didn't care about her. He didn't know about social life, or taking care of his wife, or even buying her any ornaments, or even a house. They were under the tree. And so he couldn't really provide. So it said, but at least he didn't sell her ornaments to smoke ganja, like some of his followers do. That's what Prabhupada said. So somebody, at least he didn't do that, to buy ganja. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah, it was the other way. This is Kali Yuga, yeah. If the husband lives off the dowry of the wife, in Manasamhita it says, it's a very big sin if you live off the dowry of your wife. Yes, that's supposed to be for her in case something happens, she becomes a widow or... Yeah, he cannot live off of it, right. Manasamhita. This is the reaction. There are reactions for everything we do in this life. Okay, any other questions or comments? Last but not least. I know who's last but not least, right? Satyavati. Okay? Not for this chapter. Okay, we'll see. If it's not too entangling, then we'll... Alright? What is the question? The answer is, everyone is not competent to be liberated from material bondage.
Present position, mm-hmm. But under the direction of the Lord of the Vedas.
Right.
So nice body, beautiful body,
right.
Some wealth.
So what's the question?
Religious position.
But this is... This
is already given.
Yeah.
So we should enjoy according to...
Right. So there are two processes. There is a gradual process and there is a direct process. So for those who cannot take to the direct process of Krishna consciousness, then it is recommended that you enjoy according to your position and follow the Vedas, the Vedic direction. So that's what this is being talked about here. If you cannot chant Hare Krishna, if you cannot, you know, do devotional service, then you should stay in your position and enjoy according to Vedic instruction. But now, of course, nobody can follow the Vedas. So therefore, what to do? What to do now in Kali Yuga? What about these people? Should they just follow the Vedas? And what do you say, Paramakarna? Just chant Hare Krishna. What do you say, Vanamala? 12th chapter of Gita. Yes. Step by step process. Okay, 1 minute. At least associate with devotees, yeah. Support the devotees. So for those who cannot follow the direct process, the indirect process is given. In this age of Kali, however, no indirect process is very valuable. It's Kalo Nashteva, Nashteva, Nashteva. Nothing except to chant the holy name of Krishna. So therefore, for somebody Like that, actually, as he says in 12th chapter, if they can't chant, at least support the devotees who are chanting. Well, that's 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Right. But it's also not necessary to give up everything. As Swayambhuva Manu, he was a grihastha. He's showing how you can actually live a nice Krishna conscious life also. Of course, the grihasthas in Krishna consciousness, they also had to give up everything too. It's not like we were living as grihasthas. Yes. She's right, it's by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Of which chapter? 21. Okay. Right. So what's the question?
Yes. And still, he's so kind that he's giving this.
All right. Who?
So how apply to us? For example.
So what's the question?
Please explain me.
You know what the okay? What's the question? Yeah, that part I got. So Krishna will be merciful to you. And the most merciful incarnation is Gaur Nithai. So therefore we approach Gaur Nithai and we get special mercy. And this age, actually Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he put so many conditions. He said, first you surrender and then I'll protect you. But Lord Chaitanya Nityananda, no condition, no offense. You just worship them by chanting the holy name and they're pleased. And you chant Panchatattva Mahamantra first. You worship them, and then everything becomes very easy, and you get the mercy. He's the incarnation for this age. Right, we know that. Yes, pure devotional service will come later. And let somebody else.
In the beginning,
yeah.
He wants your love and devotion.
Right.
And I was thinking.
Simply renunciation will not make you go to Krishna.
And in return, actually, usually, we're all living in palatial the grounds.
I know. My whole life I was just like in very austere conditions. And then now it's like I'm always in beautiful houses. And they're not my houses, but they're beautiful. That austerity is gone somehow or other. More other austerities are there, mental. But the physical ones are gone. Yeah. Any other comments, Madhav Puri? Neha? Yet karma dharma, yeah.
Anyone
it does not lead to devotional service.
Is considered dead.
Right. So simply by giving up everything, you won't attain Krishna. But by giving up everything and serving Krishna, then you'll get by serving Krishna. Not by just giving up and going off to the forest and renouncing. That is not by Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says simply by renunciation alone you cannot become happy. But those whose mind is fixed on me, they are the real renouncers. Yogi yukto manir brahman. Nachirena lagachiti. Very quickly they will come to me. Sannyasastu mahabaho dukkam. Gives you dukkha, actually. If you're not in Krishna consciousness, you'll just simply get misery by taking sannyas. But one whose mind is always fixed on me, then he very quickly attains Krishna. Yeah, any other questions?
Last
one, all right. I hope it's a short one. Fired up. All right, one more question.
This is about
Patanjali Sutras. You were criticizing.
What?
You were criticizing?
No.
No, practicing. Acha. You were practicing. Right, okay. So, what's the question? So you feel like you reached a very high level.
Success.
Yes, success.
Success is there.
So can you compare your success, think of yourself before you became a devotee,
okay,
and how you are now? Do you see a difference? Then why did you become a devotee?
You have solution of all your problems and completely ananda.
Right.
You're completely ananda.
So why did you come here? Why didn't you stay there?
After a few years.
So much ananda.
Yes.
Yeah, so why you came here? Madhavendra Puri wants to join. So why, my question is, so okay, you got that. So then why you gave that up and became a devotee? That's my question.
I don't know, can I
Oh, we'll talk about, okay, we'll talk about it after class. This is something.
Okay.
Within 2 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Name of Krishna. Name of Krishna. Very good. So my question remains, why did you come here? Anyway, we can talk about that after class.
No, can I say, please?
No, no, that's, your 2 minutes are finished now. We're going to have another question or comment. But thank you for your realization. We appreciate it.
Again, about this
word. Vanamali.
Last year, I saw personally, in Samadhi, I took Samadhi near,
right,
just before Prabhupada. All the Prabhupada disciples came.
So these things happen. So when we think back on our past Ananda and our life before Krishna consciousness, then we have to consider, well, what am I doing here? Why did I come? What is it actually that keeps me a devotee and makes me a devotee? We should think like that. Okay, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.